nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe when you don't get a heart.
Support comes from the Flower Farm, offering colorful rhododendrons, maple, apple, and cherry trees, and soils and amendments for spring planting. Time to plant at the Flower Farm. Open by appointment at 772-3464, 6 Rory Road, Papke's Landing.
Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Welcome to KFSK's In the Garden. I'm your host, Mindy Anderson. And with me on the line, all the way from sunny Juneau, Ed Byarski. Good afternoon, Ed.
Hi there, Mindy. 55 degrees in the sunshine here. It is a glorious day in Southeast Alaska.
It sure is. It sure is. So have you been out gardening today or landscaping or consulting? What have you been up to?
Kind of all of the above. Looking at future projects and seeing where they're putting some topsoil in, where I'm going to be planting next month as soon as I get back from down south. Transplanted a whole bunch of little primrose, denticulata, drumstick primrose seedlings that I started last year, and they've grown really well. I've got a few thousand more to go. And looked at a very interesting place where this woman is moving into a house with an attached solarium. And on the outside of the solarium, probably for screening, I suppose, were planted arborvitae, right close to the outside of it. And, of course, they really block a tremendous amount of light. But also, they have the solarium itself, got to find out about the type of glass in it, because it looks like it's some of this bronze UV-resistant glass that may not be that great for gardening underneath. She wants to grow tomatoes in there. So she's going to check. We actually found some numbers on the glass, and she's going to check with the company and see what kind of glass it is and what it's good for, other than just letting some light in so you can sit around and soak in some of it, I guess.
Right, right. I bet her house is pretty warm on that side of the house, too, with the greenhouse there.
Well, it is actually on the east side.
Okay.
This solarium is on the east side of the house. There's two houses side by side, and both of them are on the east side. She's moving from one over to the other one. The one has just standard, I assume it's standard, clear glass. She has grown tomatoes in that one. She's moving over to this other one, and she knows, she wants to grow tomatoes and wants to figure out if she can, if there's going to be enough light in that greenhouse to be able to do it. So she's going to check anyway with the company that built the greenhouse and see if they can tell her about the glass. So, but that's something worth thinking about. If I know lots of people, me too, have salvaged glass windows and stuff from various places, and some of it may not be the right kind of glass for, it doesn't let the right wavelengths of light through the glass to encourage the kind of plants we want to grow.
Okay, and so what about the plastic, like that triple wall and double wall that you pick up? That does have the amount of that. Tell me about that.
Yes. Yeah, and if you're buying this stuff new, if you know whichever company has it, they usually have the structure, well, not structural, but the technical data, which will tell you how much light is transmitted through the glass and what kind of light is going through there. So again, for places like this one in particular was a solarium built. I think there's a hot tub inside. So again, so they wanted, I think that's why the trees, this arborvitae, were planted there for screening. But again, and with fabrics inside, if you've got a lot of especially colorful fabrics, furniture, that kind of stuff, under those really bright lights that the plants light, that can really fade the fabric. So they may well have chosen that deliberately for that reason.
Sure.
Not for growing plants.
Sure, yeah, I understand. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I'm assuming, I'll bet there are probably people in Petersburg building greenhouses as we speak, or recovering old ones, or cleaning out their old greenhouses, ones that they used last year. So again, or they may be recovering greenhouses. There's some of the stuff I use It's a UV resistant greenhouse plastic, like a visqueen type plastic, but it is specifically made for that purpose, that the UV resistance helps the plastic last longer, but still allows the correct wavelength of light to come through for the plants. So again, that's worth considering. And it also, something that happens is, as you, if you put, you know, you go to a double layer, and you mentioned the triple layer, triple wall stuff.
Uh-huh.
You, with each layer, you lose a certain amount of light just going through the plastic or going through the glass.
Okay.
So where a double layer is nice for the insulation value, if you got spacing, you're losing something in the process too.
Okay. Well, I'm covering up our bed right now at our house. We made a little frame. You know, eventually it is going to be turned into a greenhouse, but we didn't want to go through the work of that right now. And so instead we just made a simple frame. We're covering it with plastic. And I just went down, because I've used this type of plastic before, I just went down to the hardware store and picked up a roll of plastic. It doesn't say really UV on it. UV anything on it. It's just what we had right here in town, and now I'm wondering if maybe I should have just ordered something, or am I just gonna, is this gonna be okay to get everything nice and hot and warm and get everything growing for me? Is it gonna work okay?
Well, it should certainly work fine for a season.
Mm-hmm.
But
yes,
it won't have the durability to last for multiple years. So this stuff, normally comes, the stuff I'm using usually comes with a 3-year or a 4-year warranty.
Sure.
And that's for places down south. I've got some ancient stuff. I've got some pieces of visqueen that I salvaged from the old tree farm, the Forest Service tree farm, out the road there. And some of that stuff is pushed close to, let's see, I moved in 89, and I salvaged one of the greenhouses back then. So that tells you this is, what, 25, 28-year-old visqueen.
That's incredible.
It has yellowed. I mean, it's pretty amazing that it lasts that long, but it's still flexible. It has yellowed over time, and that's one of the things that happens, that this gradually, that UV protective stuff breaks down and the plastic gradually turns yellow. But, for just covering beds, keeping them warm, drier for the winter, and it still lets heat through, light through, that warms the soil underneath, it works fine.
Uh-huh.
So it is a pretty amazingly durable stuff. It costs more. You
mm-hmm.
know, it's going to cost 3 or 4 times, you know, maybe more than the usual stuff that you might use just for temporary coverings that really does only last a season, maybe 2 if you're really lucky, if you're gentle with it. But it eventually that stuff crumbles.
Right, yeah.
Starts to tear and falls apart. So that's, if you know that, you can plan around that and know you're going to have to replace it. But again, talking to our sponsors about some of the stuff that they use, you know, again, you could probably get some from them too, because they probably have rolls of the stuff.
They probably do. I didn't even think about
that. I know they recycle, take theirs off, and then recover it. So it is pretty durable.
Okay. Well, anyway, I'm excited about covering up our garden bed and turning it into a little mini greenhouse. And it's already super warm in there, even though we don't have it enclosed on both the ends yet. So I was just in there during lunch. It was nice and warm. The soil looks good. I'm excited.
Yeah, and the soil warms up quickly. You know, even if you just have clear plastic right on the surface of the
mm-hmm.
soil, it's surprising how fast, on a day like today, that soil temperature will get up into the upper layers, at least. If
mm-hmm.
you dig down a ways, you can still feel it's cool soil down under. But that top layer is warming up, and it holds the heat. And gradually, you're warming the soil underneath, too. So all of that really helps. It's going to help the plants that you do plant in it, or starts that you plant in it, to get better. And keeping the rain off, we pretty much caught up with our rain deficit here, where we were 3 inches low last week, and then Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, we're pretty much caught up. Let's put it that way. We got a lot of rain here. So if we can keep some of that off the beds, that rain cools the soil. And so once it's moist enough, we don't need to add any more until, well, who knows, maybe a month or two. before we need to add any more moisture.
Okay, before we move on, I want to invite folks to call in if you have a gardening question you'd like to ask Ed. 772-3808 is the number, or 888-772-3808, and we'll take your call here on KFSK's In the Garden. So, Ed, what should we do about our pruning right now? And anything that we should be pruning?
This is definitely time for it. I've been pruning pretty much every day, and this, well, of course, this project over here where the lady had the arborvitae in front of her greenhouse, I suggested that they need to be bottomed. Don't bother to try to dig them up and salvage them. They've had snow dumped on them, and better just cut them to the ground and remove, you know, take that away, and there's going to be a lot more light coming in. So that's certainly something worth thinking about, and also thinking about pruning, thinning. If you're thinking about building a greenhouse, I mean, this all kind of goes together. You know, you want to have that generally in the sunniest spot in your yard, just like all your gardens and everything else. For most stuff, you want in the sunniest places. So look at trees that are around you. Can you prune them if they're on your own property? Can you pay for your neighbors to prune them if they're on their side and they're, you know, that's the south side? South side of your property is your neighbor's, and, you know, maybe if you're nice to them, maybe they'll do some pruning for you if you pay for it. So, but it is time. So I've been pruning everything from spireas and potentillas, and with those, just with hedge clippers, you can give them a haircut. You're clipping off the old growth from last year, this where you can see the old flower clusters that you don't need. And these spireas and potentillas bloom on new wood. So you cut stuff off from last year, and that's fine. There aren't flower buds hiding in there waiting. They will bloom later after they grow some more. But this is usually not the time for pruning lilacs and rhododendrons because they bloom on old wood. All those buds are there waiting, flower buds are on the bush, on the shrubs, waiting to open. And, of course, it's going to be early this year, the way things are going. But if you prune them very hard now, you're going to be pruning off flower buds.
Okay.
So better if you can wait, unless you have to, say they are blocking your view, or they're just severely overgrown, you need to make them smaller, so be it. You're sacrificing some blooms. But otherwise, with those, we usually wait until they are at or just after flowering time. We can bring the flowers in if we clip them off, put them in vases, give them to friends, and then they will. The new growth they put out after that will usually have some flower buds on them. Now, fruit trees, this is the time for those, too. And, yes, they are blooming on old wood also. But your fruit trees may need it because they're too thick and overgrown. You've got lots of crisscrossing branches that are rubbing on each other. So those need to be thinned out so you can let more light in, so you get better air circulation through the trees. And so that the more light will help in better fruit coloration and more sugar content. So that will be a plus for those. And considering what my cherry trees look like, if you're pruning some cherries right now, you might actually bring some branches inside, and you may be able to force them into bloom because the buds are so large already.
Okay, Ed, we have a caller on hold, so I'm going to go to the phone line here and take the caller on line one. Welcome to In the Garden.
Yeah, good afternoon. Hey, I want to graft some of my good variety apples onto a crab apple tree. The crab apple is really starting to leaf out pretty heavy now. Is it too late to be doing that?
Actually, it is not. Ideally, though, if you cut some cyanwood from the trees that you wanted to use for your grafting, you know, you can do that early. You could have done it back in, well, this year particularly, you could have cut it back in January or February. But you do want your rootstock, in this case your crab apple tree, to be more advanced. So this is perfect timing, actually, for it, and they could even be leafing out a bit more yet because that tells you that the sap is rising in the tree, and then it should cause, hopefully, if you are good at your grafting, make your good matching cuts and all, and get them held together properly, then they should heal as quickly as possible. That's really the goal. So when you do your grafting, match your cuts, tie your grafts together, and then cover them over with, whether using some saran wrap or whether you're painting the buds over so they don't lose moisture, you know, that's really the critical part, is that those cuts aren't exposed so they dry out. So I don't know what you're using for that purpose, but even little baggies, even little plastic bags that you can use a rubber band around the graft, over it, to keep the moisture inside, and even may almost act like a little mini greenhouse, can help in the healing process too.
Yeah, I've got them covered pretty good, the ones that I've done so far. I'm using Scion from recently pruned, from the recently pruning. I mean, is that a mistake to do that? Should it be something, should I just kind of wait until next year to take the Scions from like January or late, like December or November?
Well, you know, take a look. Hopefully the buds on your Scion wood isn't too far advanced, that they aren't starting to open up. You know, you really, the preference is to have them as dormant as possible when you put them onto your, you know, not so dormant crab apple. So you're going to have to kind of give it a try. And again, if this is a good sized crab apple that you've got plenty of space for grafting, go for it. Give it a try, even if they are more advanced. But it's difficult because if they're more dormant, they aren't going to be needing as much liquid, sap, and nutrients to get them to heal, where if those buds are starting to get soft and expand, it's going to be more difficult to move the nutrients that they need. So that's really the reason why having the less advanced Scion wood is a plus.
All right. Great information. Thanks a lot, Ed.
All right.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And you can call in too, 772-3808 or 888-772-3808 to call in with a question for In the Garden. So, Ed, we were talking about pruning. Do you want to go back with that and finish that a little bit before
and
we move on?
A couple of real basic things.
Uh-huh.
Really, even before you start pruning, is get out your tools. Oil them so that they, you know, so that they're easy to use, to open and close. Sharpen them so that you are making nice, clean cuts. And if you've got a lot of pruning to do, your hands are going to be less sore if you have sharp tools than if they're rather dull, and you have to work that much harder, whether they be little hand clippers or loppers, any of that sort of thing. You know, clean them, sharpen them. And also think about, we were talking about cleaning, if you're going to be doing much pruning, particularly of fruit trees, from one tree to another, is actually washing, sterilizing them in between trees, sometimes even between, if you're doing just a lot of cutting. If you have a little jar or a can with some bleach in it that you can dip the cutting edges, the head of the pruners into, to clean them is worthwhile, so that way you're not transferring fungus and other disease potentially from one tree to another. That's certainly worthwhile. Then look at your tree, and it's sometimes good to have a helper with you, particularly if you're up on a tree in a ladder, you know, just to help steady the ladder. But also to look at the tree, think about what do you want it to look like eventually. And, you know, kind of map out the cuts you're going to make. If it's in a big old rugosa rose or a currant bush, something like that, those you would want to take out the biggest, oldest growth out of the center and to help stimulate new growth from them. If you're looking at a fruit tree, an apple, a cherry, again, like I mentioned about removing branches that are crossing or they're really thick in the center of the tree. But also, even before that, prune out the dead wood. If you can see the dead wood, because the new wood has got strong buds growing on them, you may, down at Peterswood, you may have more green stuff showing on some than others. You know, think about that, look at that, deadwood first comes out, and then you start doing the pruning and the thinning and the shaping as you go. And if that other, and also think about, don't take too much. Don't prune too much on one tree or shrub in 1 year. So if you want to do some, tree's been overgrown, hasn't been pruned in 20 years or something like that, you're better off pacing yourself, do some pruning each year, you know, like a quarter of the pruning over 3 or 4 years. So because you don't want to stimulate too much new growth, like lots of suckering growth, if you're taking off big branches, there's still all those nutrients are down, stored in the roots, and they need a place to be used to grow more plants that may stimulate a whole lot of suckering growth, which is not what we want. But you can remove that stuff in the summertime, too, if you see that you're getting a whole bunch of sprouting, like around where you made one big cut on a big branch, or on a branch that's fairly horizontal, you may get a bunch of buds popping out all along that, and you don't want all of those tall, straight sprouts coming out of that. So those, you would want to thin them out, and you can even bend them down so they have a lower, prune them out so they have buds pointing in a direction, like into an opening maybe, where you more want to grow more plant material, more branches.
Okay, yeah, I was going to ask you about the sucker growths and that sort of thing. And then I have a couple of questions, Ed. Let's see. A couple years ago from you, you gave me a bunch of little maple trees, and there were about 5 or 6 in one container. They were really small, maybe one branch coming up. And so I planted those, a couple in one area and a couple in another, and I actually, I'm wondering if I did this correctly, because I put like 3 of those within one area of, you know, not very far apart from each other. Should I have not planted those so close? Or
when you say not very far apart, is how, like just a few inches apart or a foot apart? Or
like a foot apart, you know, in a little cluster of 3. Is that too close for those particular maple trees that were so little and they just look like twigs?
Well,
but
maybe. Again, it kind of depends on how well they'll grow. You've got to...
They were vine maples.
Again, you could maybe dig them up if they're not too big yet. How tall or how large diameter are they now?
They're very little still.
Oh, okay. So they'd be easy to separate, probably. So then if you're, you know, where with birches, the classic appearance, say, for birches is to have them in a clump of 3 or 4 or 5, you know, which looks really good. And they grow fine like that. But there is always the concern that once they get big, you know, if they get up to be 3 or 4 inches in diameter each tree, then if they're touching in between those trees, you can have the bark starts to die out if they're not growing together, you know, if they're not from one, all from one tree. But in there where that bark is growing together, it's also a place where fungus and disease can potentially grow too. So that can be a matter of some concern. So if you know, because I don't remember what kind of maples these were, if you know what kind of maples they are, whether they were, I don't know, little vine maples or maples or even Japanese maples, you know, how big they're going to get might make a difference on whether you leave them there versus separate them now, while it's easy to do, versus 3 or 4 years from now when they're much bigger and their roots are more intertangled.
Okay. Yeah, these were vine maples, and so I'll take another look at those. And then I also have a question, and maybe this happened to some other folks too in the fall. The deer munched a little bit on my new azaleas in the fall, and they actually nibbled off, you know, the leaves and everything. And they were new azaleas that I planted, you know, last year. And is all that going to come back okay this year? You know, or is it, what do you think?
How about a maybe?
Okay.
Again, you may be able to see, when we prune, rhodias and azaleas are rather different than a lot of other stuff, because a lot of times, if even on a big old rhodie has, and that may have long, you know, really long, might have 4 or 5 foot long stems with no leaves on them down low, and leaves are way out there at the tip, but they can be overgrown, they may look kind of scraggly, and you think, oh, I'd really like to make this smaller and have it hopefully sprout that. Well, you can, because there are a lot of hidden buds essentially underneath the bark. Anywhere, really, anywhere there had been a leaf in past years. You can't really tell where that is sometimes once those stems get up fairly large. So you can prune them back hard, and if you prune them back hard now, then they will, these buds will show up. It may take a month or more, but you'll start to see these buds start to sprout. So your deer may well have done essentially the same kind of severe pruning, but there should be buds that can sprout again. And bottom line, I suppose, is protect them from the deer, obviously, but
right.
We learn. and really hope for the best and see. You should, assuming that they didn't eat it back to the ground, there should be a bunch of buds that are likely to sprout, and then you can see how they do and where, which, you know, which areas where the buds are going to sprout from. Hopefully they're growing in the way that you kind of sort of want them to grow.
Okay. Well, Ed, it is almost time to let you get back to your gardening. We didn't talk about any seed starting this week like we did last week. What can we grow? What can we start real quick? What can we start this week?
Well, yeah, last week my tomatoes were not up yet. I had started them this previous Sunday. They are now up, but they just still have the first two seed leaves so far. So they've got a long ways to go, but that's okay. I'll be patient with those. I might think, gee, I wish I would have started them weeks earlier, but I'm not going to predict that at this point. But other stuff that could be started and actually could be direct seeded if your soil is fairly warm in your garden beds, you could actually be planting, certainly I mentioned spinach, radishes, kale, bok choy, that kind of stuff, the cabbage family crops. You can actually direct seed broccoli, cauliflower, or you can plan to start those indoors and then planting again. You know, you look at the seed packet, it tells you it takes 3 to 4 weeks or something like that before the last frost date. So that's probably a fairly safe bet at this point. I mean, I'm not going to predict when the last or next frost is going to be, but it is very clear here. So we may have frost here in Juneau. And so I'm going to be careful. Well, I don't have that much out there yet that's tender. But for those folks who may have started stuff or have things up and growing vigorously, if it looks like we're going to have frost, have some blankets handy, have some milk jugs or 5-gallon buckets with water handy that you can put around the plants if they're in the ground. Otherwise, if you're have plants now and maybe you're starting to harden them off, just plan to bring them indoors so they won't freeze overnight. But so a lot of this stuff, you know, lettuce could probably be started now. Swiss chard, if you're starting them indoors. I usually plant mine outdoors, direct feed them, and do fine. And I planted peas on the last day of February, and they're now a half inch to an inch tall, and they were under just a single layer of plastic in the garden. So I have great hopes we may be eating peas by the end of April at the rate things are looking. So seeds are cheap. Plant some.
Okay.
Experiment. Who knows? I'm not going to predict the weather. I mean, I'm hoping for the best, but, Mother Nature may still slap us a time or two here. We have no idea what's going to happen. I'm hoping we have a great spring and a wonderful summer. So I'm going to try some sweet corn this year. We'll see what happens.
Okay. We'll let you go, Ed. I'm sure you're very busy today. You've got a lot to do yet before the sun goes down, and we're going to get to some music this afternoon here on KFSK, and we'll be talking to you next week for In the Garden.
Yes, next weekend, somewhere near Olympia, Washington. So we'll see what sort of garden reports I'll have from down there.
Okay, well, we can't wait for the report. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Bye, Mindy.
Thanks, Ed.
Thank you. ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon.
Support comes from the Flower Farm, offering colorful rhododendrons, maple, apple, and cherry trees, and soils and amendments for spring planting. Time to plant at the Flower Farm. Open by appointment at 772-3464, 6 Rory Road, Pathkeys Landing.